The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Hi, everybody. Happy St. Patrick's Day, if you celebrate. My name's Fusho. Nice to see everybody at the Zendo. Nice to see everybody online. Although quite a few people have their cameras off, I noticed there. If we haven't met before, I'm an assistant teacher here. And it's lovely to see some new faces and some of the faces that have been around for a long time as well. We are, for those that don't know, we are heading into the culmination of our winter practice period. And we're finishing up about 3 months of study, intensive study, and we've been led by our practice leader over here, Shuso Jacqueline. And Jacqueline will be leading an urban session coming up this week into the weekend, which will be really interesting. And that will be focused on our study text that we've been studying since the beginning of the year, and that's Dogen's Uji, Being Time. And so she has created a bunch of workshops with a bunch of other teachers and people who are going to be joining called Being Time in a TikTok World. So I like this theme very much. And Jacqueline happens to be a watchmaker, so it's very apropos. And we'll be able to investigate time even a little bit more. And then that'll culminate in a celebration on Sunday when she will become a senior student. So I encourage everybody to join in any part of that if you can. So this text that we've been studying, we've studied quite a bit. But I am going to talk a little more about it. Just to make sure we were as thorough as we can be. I just wanted to say I went online on to YouTube to look at the Village Zendo YouTube channel and to look at some of the Dharma talks that we have there. So you can see all of our talks as well as on the podcast. You can watch them. And I just have to say it's a beautiful example of Indra's net. So many beautiful, different, diverse voices that are offering beautiful Dharma talks in their own expression of our studies and of our practice. So I encourage you to do that. If you're not tired of studying Uji, or you're feeling like you want to just dig into it a little bit more, it is one of those texts that can feel pretty hard to grasp. So I recommend a book that I found. I don't know if someone else has recommended it or not, but I recently found one called Being Time, A Practitioner's Guide to Dogen Zenji's Sobogojo Uji, Sobogenzo Uji. And it's by Shinshu Roberts, and she wrote it in 2018. It's a nice companion. It's a good one. Yeah, I hadn't found it. Shuso is giving us a thumbs up. So it's a nice way to try to sort of access how do I practice with this instead of just trying to figure out this writing. She's the co-founder of Ocean Gate Zen Center in Santa Cruz and studied at and trained at San Francisco Zen Center for 17 years. So I like her take on it. It's very accessible, practical inside of a contemporary way, which can be hard with these old texts. And particularly because I think it's always really important to not just try to interpret the text and figure out what it means in sort of this esoteric way, but to always be asking, how does this affect me in my life? And how does this help me? This text that might feel so ungraspable, how can I make it accessible for myself in a way that's meaningful in my life? So she has a summary of the book. I won't quote from the text because we've been doing a lot of that. But her summary of this text that studies time and really the idea of all of us as beings of time and all of us being time beings. So the idea is that we are time and that we experience time for ourselves, but that is not separate from anything else, any other time, any other place, or anybody else's experience of time. And she says, awakened practice can only happen in this present moment. Although the Dharma might seem as if it were somewhere else, far away, it is the time right now. And that's what Dogen tells us. And understanding how this comes about is Dogen's primary teaching. He explains that everything is simultaneously manifesting, both as this moment and as all moments that together make up the world's functioning. A particular being time or time being or a Dharma position is sort of like a hologram that includes all of time and beings as one event that cannot be separated. So I think right there, at this point, when people start talking like that, people's faces kind of glaze over a little bit, and they're like, what? This has nothing to do with me or anything that I'm interested in. What are you talking about? Or sometimes people think, I must not be getting it. There's something wrong. But I want to just encourage you to keep sitting on the cushion and investigating what your experience of that feels like. And while Dogen's teaching about time being is multifaceted, it's always about the concrete activity of each being's life as it unfolds. And she gives an example. So imagine you're attending a meeting with a difficult coworker. You enter your hypothetical meeting with 360 degrees of possible action points of exit from each moment. Will your response be dictated by past ill will? Or will you be open to listening and perhaps be able to be responsive to experiences with your coworkers? Yet this moment doesn't have to be defined by your past or your future agendas. Since the moment in itself is already liberated, you have the possibility to respond without attachments. This freedom is the independent aspect of a being time, freed from past karma and future desires. Liberation can only happen in response to your present moment. But if you're caught by your past experiences and expectations for the future, your exit from each moment will be quite narrow and probably unskillful. And so a big part of our practice then is becoming aware of when we're caught and then changing course. So you might not think much is happening when we're meditating on the cushion, but more and more I think, talking about me, that we can't overestimate that cultivation of that ability to change a response and to choose a different response. This freedom is the independent aspect of a being time freed from past karma and future desires. So we know how our brains work. We know also that we inherit causes and conditions that we're born with that we consider karma from past lives or just generations in the past. Chinsu Roberts says, only when we can fully engage without being caught by the snares of our desire can we respond to each encounter with a liberated mind. The essence of being time's expression is compassion, wisdom, and skillful action. Dogen's teaching on being time's inseparability is not a philosophical treatise on time's relationship to being. It's a primer on alleviating the suffering of self and other. No single thing and no moment of time is left out of this very moment of time being. So I think we know it's easy to get caught and trapped by our thoughts. And we know that our minds work out like that. And we know that we have lots of ways of talking about lost in thought. You know, what we're cultivating on the cushion is the ability to notice that we are now lost in thought. Not that that's a bad or good thing, but to be aware of it and to come back to the present moment. So coming back to that present moment and noticing that we are doing something that we've been doing our whole life that might not be good for us is where it can start. And that's where the freedom and liberation can begin. So one slightly different pause before we respond in a knee-jerk fashion the way we've always responded. I just don't think it can be overestimated how important that is and how much that ripples out. So that little shift in the way we see ourselves, the way we might react to ourselves, the way we think we need to be defined, or the way we think we know ourselves or we think we're wrong or not quite enough, or right, or the best thing that ever happened. A bigger picture around that small viewpoint can offer freedom to choose a different alternative. So I think that's a way that we work on the cushion with saving ourselves, and we take that out into the world, and that reflects back and helps us save the world. I don't think it's a small thing. I think that's how we change our karma. And particularly with all that's happening in the world right now, I personally felt a little bit of a frightening understanding, looking around at different things raising up, but, you know, say in the context of anti-Semitism, this feeling of like, oh, this is how history repeats itself, is when we're too trapped and we're only looking at things from one point of view, and we are not able to step outside of our narrow view of time, our narrow experience of time, and include that view along with the whole universe, then we tend to just get stuck in this cycle. And that can be really harmful, obviously. So I think it can be harmful just on a personal level to ourselves if we're getting stuck in the way we're looking. And then on a bigger scale, obviously as a collective, if we're getting stuck. Or, yeah, for trapping ourselves with one view. I recently saw The Zone of Interest. It's a film that won Best Foreign Film at the Oscars, made by Jonathan Glazer. And he worked on it for about 10 years. It's about the Nazi commanders and their families who were living at Auschwitz. During the war, literally, they were running Auschwitz. So they were living right there, literally, next door to the gas chambers. And there have been, you know, Holocaust films and stories for a long time, but he was really thinking really deeply about how he could do it in a different way. And I read a profile piece with him, and he just was trying to consider really seriously how to render the genocide on screen in a way that he felt would make a different impact and might encourage a different response. And he said, looking at the darkening world around us, I had a feeling I had to do something about our similarities to the perpetrators rather than the victims. When you say there were monsters, you're also saying that could never be us, which is a very dangerous mindset. Glazer had been contemplating an uncomfortably subjective way of looking at this historical act of barbarity when he happened to read a little bit about this book. So the film is based on the book by Martin Amis called The Zone of Interest. And it tapped into two things that he'd been thinking about: perspective and complicity. So those are the things that I'm talking about, and I think Dogen is talking about, when we're sitting on the cushion and we're aware of what our minds are doing. He said, the story is told from the viewpoint of a fictional Nazi commandant And I'd already decided I wanted to tell the story not of those within the camp, but those who ran it. And there was a courage in the book, and it absolutely committed to the wholehearted expression of that mindset in an extremely uncomfortable way. And he's very clear. He says, for him, this film is not a biopic. It's about making the connection between the past and the present. It's not saying, look what happened. We could never do that. It's saying, whoa, let's look at what happened and let's see how to recognize ourselves in that and what's going on right now in the world. Are we being complicit? Are we resisting? Can we make a different choice? In his Oscar, he said, the feeling that he was chasing, which he was trying to figure out how to tell the story and why that was so scary for him, he said, it's a movie made out of a deep sense of anger. I wasn't interested in making a museum piece. I didn't want people to have the safe distance of the past and walk away untroubled by what they see. I wanted to say, no, no, no. We should be left feeling deeply unsafe about this kind of horror that is underneath everything. Because the family who lives there is going about their life as if nothing else was happening. And that was very, you know, ordinary. And then when he won the Oscar, in his speech, his exact words were, our film shows where dehumanization leads at its worst. It shaped all of our past and present. Right now, we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people. Whether the victims of October the 7th in Israel or the ongoing attack in Gaza, all the victims, this dehumanization, how do we resist? So I think how do we choose a different response can be the same question as how do we resist? How do we change our karma? How do we make a difference and create a different, brighter future? We start by sitting on the cushion with ourselves and with our awareness that we are not separate from all time. We're not separate from the past, the present, or the future. And one little act of resistance to say no or wait or pause before responding can be the difference between life and death. I was telling a dear Sangha member recently a personal story about my family history. And so my mother died of pancreatic cancer very young. And at the time, she had sort of lived her life actually in fear of getting cancer. And she was very healthy. She didn't trust doctors. She was very, you know, early stage organic food and like all of this. But she got pancreatic cancer. And when she was diagnosed, it was very far along, but she just went into denial. She couldn't accept it. It was just too hard for her to believe. So she refused to admit that she had it. And then she refused any sort of treatment. She did try some alternative treatments. But it was almost the very last day that she died before she realized this was it. And my sister was younger than I was, but I was 19, so I was still pretty young. And then, very strangely, about 12 years later, my father died of pancreatic cancer. And he has a different way of dealing with it, but also didn't deal with it. Sort of shut down, surrendered, gave up, and that was it. So then a few years later, a couple years ago, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And I really credit my practice to just automatically helping support me in this instinctual knowing that I wanted to choose something different. Even though, I mean, I had all this fear around the way that they had responded, I just sat with where I was at, and I used my practice to help me stay present and turn towards it. Not easy, but also not denying and not clinging and being swallowed up so that I couldn't function. Just put one foot in front of the other. I also asked for jokes. That was my form of resistance. But I felt very strongly that I wanted that sort of energy of denial and fear and surrender, of just giving up on life. I didn't want to carry that on. Just an example. And I think that that's what we mean by making just a little bit of a different choice. If we can just have a little more space, a little bit of a bigger perspective, a little bit of awareness that doesn't include just me and my one-sided view and my narrow perspective and my selfish, whatever, need or fear or whatever that is. I think that's where it starts, is on the cushion. I just want to encourage all of us not to underestimate that. How can we resist? Taking action is the next step. It doesn't have to mean choosing a side. Doesn't have to mean following what somebody's telling you. Doesn't have to mean repeating in large, all capital letters, something you heard on TikTok. I think it means allowing yourself the space to trust in the moment. You can choose something more peaceful, more productive. Someone who knew a lot about that was Dr. Martin Luther King. So I'll just leave us with a quote from his speech, "Remaining Awake Through a Great Revolution." He said, "I do not wish to minimize the complexity of the problems to be faced in achieving disarmament and peace, but we shall not have the courage, the insight to deal with such matters unless we are prepared to undergo a mental and spiritual change." We must fix our visions not merely on the negative expulsion of war, but upon the positive affirmation of peace. Let us stand up. Let us be a concerned generation. Let us remain awake through a great revolution. We still have a long, long way to go, but at least we've made a creative beginning.